Hello, everybody, and welcome back. It is another edition of the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus Musicians Mastermind. Carrie, J.K., Joe Freeman are all in the house today. Joe is on a little bit. He's on a safari in an undisclosed location hunting big game animals. He hunts them with his camera, though. He doesn't shoot anything. So he'll be posting pictures of all kind of like Sasquatch and Loch Ness Monster and all that stuff soon. So
well, be watching for that.
Yes. It's an undisclosed location. We're not allowed to say. So Today we're going to talk about the 10 things.
A different state.
It's a different state. He's in a state of something. Today we're going to talk about 10 things for you to avoid when you're trying to market your music. I think we will touch on maybe sort of alternatives to each one of these as we go down the list here. But it is easy to make legitimate mistakes when you're first starting out. We've all done it. We've all gone after things. Joe, what are some of the things you've seen people do to market things and you just had to sort of like scratch your head and say, no, excuse me, that's not right? You got a good example?
A lot of it starts with just having too many things going on at once and doing it kind of haphazardly. So a lot of people will have multiple WordPress websites and then they'll be trying to throw up all this stuff all over the place. And they haven't like locked down one way of communicating, one way of bringing in their customers. They're trying to do too much at once.
So like somebody who will remain nameless, who has a whole bunch of websites that hired you and didn't tell you about all his different websites.
Yeah.
That person will remain nameless.
Definitely. You're better off having like one to two locations to publish to, getting that optimized, getting on a continuous schedule, being consistent with your publishing, making sure you're on a schedule and that you have everything locked down, then maybe bringing in a virtual assistant to help you with what you're doing that can be offloaded, and then thinking about other avenues as far as opening other things up.
You touched on another thing there, Joe, as well. That was something I totally forgot about, but I need to be reminded of, is too many things. That's a great idea. Like, set up one kind of system or one whatever you're going to pick, whatever you're going to do, and get that set up so it's working for you. Then start adding other stuff. But you said another word. You said consistent or consistency. This is something that I think a lot of people go like, well, I sent out an email 2 months ago. You know, and there is no like consistency. We're doing things randomly, half-assed, kind of running here, running there. So I would tie consistency into that. I'm, you know, these are all things I think all three of us can kind of like relate to as well. I am going to send, I'm going to put out one here that we talk about in a, we've mentioned over the course of the time that we've had the podcast, and that is going after everyone. Everyone is not your audience. I think that a lot of people come into marketing, they get all excited because they look at the internet. Wow, it's worldwide. There's billions of people online. This is so exciting. All these people are my customers. And that's not really true. You're not, you have to work out a niche, figure out what that is and go after the folks that are going to be most interested in your message, as opposed to just trying to go after everyone. I think in the early days of the internet, there was this conception that all you have to do is put up a website and people will just show up and you know, you'll get rich. Right?
Yeah, at one time that was true, but you didn't have as much competition. And, you know, that was a long time ago that was
like mid-90s.
The absolute truth. But now there's so many people out there publishing and there's so much knowledge out there that you can learn things fairly quickly. So you can't just throw something up nowadays and hope to make $1 million.
I heard
and build an audience of 100,000.
Hey, check this out, guys. I heard the statistic yesterday. Okay. This is mind boggling. 500 new videos show up on YouTube every hour. Can you believe that? I mean, that's the amount of people out there that are. So you can't just throw up a YouTube video, throw up write a blog, create a Facebook page, a Twitter account or an Instagram account, and just, you know, the old build it and they will come sort of philosophy. You have to do more than that. You got to do more than just have.
Actually, that doesn't sound like that big of a number to me.
Well,
that sounds kind of expected. Considering it's like worldwide, that's everybody that can upload anything to YouTube. That's not just videos on one topic.
Correct.
Yeah, so, I'm not surprised by that. If anything, it could have been higher.
I think the main point is you used to have
like a high production, and you, in order to play the game, you used to spend a lot of money just to get a video out. And we've said this multiple times, like I'm off location and audio with you guys, you know, you can publish really easy these days and you don't have to have a whole team to do it. I have one phone sitting by the lake with, you know, my son fishing beside me. So it's very easy to publish these days.
Right. So that it means that you've got to do a little bit more. One of the things we have a couple of references that we put in the show notes for you guys. One of the things that came up was, I'm going to combine a couple of them. One of them was paying attention to SEO and also having the end result in mind as you create content. So that you're just not willy-nilly creating any kind of piece of content. How do you tie the content A into generating something where that people will want to read or watch or listen to? How do you create it in such a way that it's going to go, it's going to satisfy that niche? And on the other hand, and then how does that content lead to where you want the potential listener, reader, watcher to go, or what you want them to do? You know what I mean? Carrie and I talked about this in one of the earliest things we talked about. He really kind of set me straight, was this idea of just producing content, just to produce content without having some sort of like way, some sort of path you're leading them on. You know, you and I talked about this, Carrie, maybe a year or two ago. And it really got me thinking that like, it can't just be content just for the sake of content, right? It's got you have to have some kind of end game in mind, something set up that you eventually want them to buy, sign up for, correct?
Yeah. I think the way I probably said it would have been to do with like, when you go out to do gigs, don't go empty handed, always have something that they can take home with them. But that's not just to make money off of them. That's also so that they've got something to remember you by, so they'll come back.
Right. You want to be kind of like driving them to take some kind of action, maybe even if it's just to sign up so they see the next blog or the next podcast or whatever. So it should be moving them through the process and not just willy-nilly. Oh, here's some content. Check it out.
But yeah, but I mean that. What I will qualify that with now, and this comes to, because I know we're going to talk about email signups and triggers and those sorts of things. And that comes into when there's like, the other thing that will come with a lot of blog posts is the pop-up that will come up with your offer. And I've got to say, as a consumer, probably more than as a producer, I would say the timing of that is absolutely vital. Because I know talking to other people as well, nothing winds me up more than when I get to the thing I want to read, and before I can read paragraph one, I've got 10 pop-ups I need to kill, all of them trying to sell me something.
Terrible. That's terrible. I agree with you. Totally.
If those pop-ups had showed up when I was three quarters of the way down the page or halfway down the page or whatever, or at least maybe 3 minutes into me browsing, not straight away before I've even read the first word. I mean, I understand why they do it, because there'll be statistics that most people don't read that far. But seriously, are those people going to be signing up to your email list anyway?
I think that I hear something I wrote on my list, and it goes right along with that, Carrie, and that is going for a sale, and the sale can be anything, too soon. Mm. get them, like, yeah, talk to them, like, create, like, get, build a little bit of a rapport. I, you know, you don't just, if you're, say if you're a door-to-door salesperson, you don't just, you know, that's like just walking up to somebody, you know, banging on their door and say, hey, buy this shit is not going to, you're probably going to get a lot of doors slammed in your face. But if you can build a, find a better way, build a rapport. I have a very, one of our mentor, Becky Auer was did door-to-door sales to businesses when she was young, and she would just do things like show up with a box of donuts, and she would, you know, make sure that everybody on the staff was eating, you know, had the donuts, and she built like kind of a little bit of a rapport, and then they would say, well, what the hell are you here for? You're obviously not just dropping off donuts. And then she would be able to open up and talk about the you know, what she was, which she would like them to look at. So I think this is something that a lot of people think that, like, oh, if they click on my post or if they sign up for my email, then that means I can hit them immediately with some kind of hard sell, or I can make every post on Instagram about signing up for my list, because it's the internet, right? So I just, you know, and I think going too quickly, too hard for them to take action. So this is a kind of softening or a kind of qualification of what we just said about not ever asking for anything and just being willy-nilly, to going like immediately out of the gate with buy my shit. That's the fastest way to turn people off. I think, Joe, you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So I think it comes down to, you know, first you got to realize, or did they, is it their first exposure to you? Are they a cold, warm, or hot audience? Meaning, you know, you bring the donuts, you're bringing the donuts because they don't know who you are at all. You know, you're trying to warm them up, and, you know, they don't even have a pre-frame to know what you're about yet. So if you just walk up to them as some stranger, they're just going to look at you like you're crazy on the internet or otherwise. You smack them with the sales process right off the beginning, they're going to bounce. So you've got to pre-frame them based on what they've seen of you previously. And then you have to have a purpose for the next piece of content. And that purpose can't be right away to sell. Sometimes it's to teach a little bit. Sometimes it's just going to give a little nugget of you know, information about whatever the product or service is. Sometimes it's just to entertain, which with, you know, musicians and content creators, entertainment a lot of times comes first. And then from there, your call to action has to flow evenly with those pre-frames and that content in between to build that relationship. These are people, you know, they want it to be what's in it for them, and what's in it for them can be entertainment. It doesn't always have to be problem solution. You know what I mean?
They need to be enjoying what they're listening to, watching, or reading.
Exactly. Or it has to be solving a problem. It has to be what's in it for me? Why is this going to be interesting to me while I'm listening, reading, or watching your content?
I think also you said something about flowing, and that's not the word you used, about flowing it into the action you want them to take, as opposed to like what Carrie was talking about, like you land on the page and there's a, you know, in 5 seconds there's a pop-up.
Yeah, that the only time you're going to do 5 seconds there's a pop-up is if you know that they've already been pre-framed with another piece of content of yours. So they're no longer a cold audience. They're a fairly warm audience and they already know what you're about. There are times when people can accidentally get to those pages, but you should never smack someone with a pop-up right away.
The other thing is when you do get that, the five-second pop-up, you end up like remembering the site for the wrong reasons, because there's when I'm looking for a list of articles on something, there's certain blogs or addresses that I'll avoid because I know it's going to add however long to my day going through the adverts on them. So people do notice that and they will avoid you in future, which is the opposite of what you want.
I will like to move on to another topic. Sending unsolicited emails and unsolicited direct messages. I stopped accepting friend requests on Facebook for this exact reason. people know that I am in marketing. They know that I have a podcast that's like been around a long time and has a good following. So I get them. They send a friend request. I'm like, oh, nice. Somebody sent me a friend request. I hit yes, and immediately I get a direct message. Go to my band page. Sign up. Like our page.
That's the wrong way to do it, you know.
You're an asshole.
You can direct message people, but it's not about what's in it for me being the person messaging you. It's what's in it for you. Like, if I was going to reach out to you, Lou, because you had a podcast, my first thing wouldn't be sign up to my band page. My first thing would be, hey, checked out your podcast. This was really cool how you did that. I'd fluff up your ego a little bit, and if there was some value I could give you, I'd give it to you to build the relationship, and then hope that you would go to my profile, see my banner on my Facebook profile, and be like, oh, this guy is actually in a band. What's his band about? Oh, it's rock and roll. I'm interested in that. Let me listen to it. Oh, okay, this guy is not too bad. And then, you know, after a couple more messages, maybe I get lucky and you invite me, or maybe we have a full conversation at some point. And then I'm like, hey, you know, I can benefit your podcast by doing this if you would only have me on for a couple minutes. Then you'd probably be more warmer to saying, all right, Joe, let's do that.
Absolutely. I couldn't really add anything to that. Stop with the unsolicited messages. People don't like that. They don't respond to that unless the message is something friendly. Like if I accepted your friend request and you sent me, say, hey, thank you so much for accepting my friend request. I'm looking forward to getting to know you better. I saw that you're a musician. I'm a musician too. What kind of music, you know, do you like? Or I really liked your, I listened to your podcast. It's really cool. And maybe ask a question about a specific podcast to show like you're really interested. Like, oh, that was very cool. You guys did the thing on the Van Halen's first album. Eddie Van Halen's one of my biggest influences. So that gets a conversation started as opposed to, like my band page.
Yeah. I mean, part of the problem is that this is a thing that got recommended as an approach for a long time.
Yep.
And like most things, things work until they don't. That pool got fished dry quite a long time ago. But the people who are successful with that, and Matt Steady is one of them, is because Matt Steady is one hell of a people person. And he actually used it to start conversations. So he did it the right way.
Yep.
And Carlos is his mentor, and Carlos as well is about doing it. It's about starting conversation. And that's what it takes. Anytime you do that and it looks like marketing, it's not going to work. And the other thing that will sometimes happen is if you do take that approach and the person who gets the message writes back and tells you where to get off, don't start a flame war with them. If they've got back to you, then maybe you've got a chance to win them round. But it isn't a chance for you to start laying off on somebody, because if you do that, you might think, oh, they'll never be my customer anyway. Great, it's a chance for me to get into a bit of fisticuffs. No, because what that person will do is then word will get around. And once word gets around, you'll find the next person you try to start a conversation with will see you coming.
On a related topic is, and I see people do this all the time, their idea of marketing on social media is posting over and over on all the channels, like my band page, go to my website, check out my new record, like over and over. They post nothing interactive. They post no real content. It's kind of like, you know, it's like a machine gun fire of advertising is basically what they're doing. They're treating these platforms as like free advertising. Stop. Stop doing that. Nobody likes that. Nobody likes that at all. You're just annoying people. And actually, some platforms have prohibitions against it and will ding you, maybe give you a little suspension or something like that, or may shadow ban you for doing that, because these platforms want real content. They don't want to cover it up with advertising. When you do advertise, they want you to do it in the right way so that you're not A, messing up the platform, and B, messing up yourself either. Go ahead, Kerry. I think you want to say something.
Tom Robinson has a thing. He's fond of saying that Twitter is a telephone, not a megaphone.
Yeah.
That's handy. It's a thing for conversations. It's not just about yelling at people.
What I want to move on to, the next one that I have on my list related to this is the speaking of that, is the follow unfollow approach on Twitter and Instagram. I vehemently disagree with this. I know that some people, and I don't know if they're still using it, but this was very popular about 2 years ago, where you would follow somebody, and if they didn't follow you back, you would unfollow them. When they followed you, you would send them a direct message. Sometimes it was a bot generated by a bot. Sometimes it wasn't. The devil's in the details with this one. You send the direct message, you have to make sure that it's a conversation starting kind of message and not a, you know, like my band page message. But I think that you're missing the point. I've been saying this for years. Social media, the first word is social. You don't walk into a party and start handing out CDs. I mean, I guess that's an approach. I mean, in today's, with everything being online, if you did that today, that might be novel and might get people's attention. But you don't just sit and talk about yourself the whole time or talk about, like, you know, how great you are. No, you interact, you talk, you start conversations, you go back and forth. That's what, like Carrie just got done saying, it's a telephone, not a megaphone. But people are just, you're trying to go for a quick sale here or something like that. This is not where it's to be found. These programs are set up to be social, for people to interact, to talk, to go back and forth, to share content with each other. Anybody want to respond to that? No?
No, I think you have it 100%. We've said it's about building relationships with people, letting people get to know who you are. So I wouldn't just, you know, keep contacting people with sales pitches. I'd try to get them to know who I was, what I was about.
Well, I think that the follow-unfollow problem with the follow-unfollow thing is you're going at it with the wrong attitude. You're coming into these to these platforms with the wrong thing. I mean, Twitter and Instagram can both be really powerful platforms for connecting with people that you can help and who can help you if you actually connect with them, not just follow, unfollow. You don't follow me, screw you, I'm going to unfollow you and I'm going to go to somebody else. You should be following people not based on that. You should be following people based on your niche, right, Carrie? So if you're in a certain niche,
Build up to start with? Two reasons. One of them, it's because people saw having a telephone number, follower number as being important and showing that you are somebody. To be honest, I think it's more about stroking an ego. I don't buy that. If you're somebody no one's ever heard of with a high follower count, I don't think people are going to be impressed just because you've got a high follower count, especially because people know that the ways there are to get it. What they are going to do is look at your content. And if I get somebody who follows me or feels like that, then to be honest, I probably will follow them back if we meet somewhere on a Venn diagram. And if when I look at their profile, I see that they are actually putting content on there and that will be something that I actually want to read on the feed there. If all I see is a bunch of reposts or less than that, or stuff that's got absolutely nothing to do with my life whatsoever, I won't follow them back, and I don't care if they unfollow me because, like,
exactly,
just not connected in any way.
Right. I totally. Go ahead, Joe.
I think what you guys just said was the point to that is that, you know, if you're putting out content and you have somewhere for the people to go if they check out your profile, then you have content for them to take the next step. If you follow and unfollow, you're following people to hope that they come to your content and take the next move, which if you get more followers, pushes up the algorithm and allows whatever platform it is to push you more further. So they were trying to game the algorithm as well as get people to look at their profile and take the next step if their profile was optimized. If their profile wasn't optimized, then they missed the point.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other thing that will sometimes happen is that you will, and sometimes there are certain people that will do this thing now for shady reasons, that they'll start off with a campaign to build up some followers like this, and it'll all look quite innocuous. And then someday, out of the blue, you'll start getting really objectionable and horrible content appearing on your feed. And it turns out that this account that you once had something in common with actually was, whether that was the end game in the first place or they just moved in that direction, we don't know. But it kind of feels like they've sort of used you in under false pretenses for that. I'm not going to say what kind of content, because it can be all kinds of things. But when the stuff that they know that wouldn't get a high follower count immediately, but they want to game. So that's when it gets sinister.
Speaking of sinister, and I know this is a topic that's near and dear to Carrie's heart, buying random followers, random likes, random downloads, specifically or especially from bots.
How is this still an industry?
It's still an industry.
I thought everybody knew that this was a dumb idea by now. I mean, there must be somebody who hasn't got the memo, because, I mean, like, the last time I posted on SoundCloud, and SoundCloud's always had a bot problem. It always used to be, whenever I post a SoundCloud, I knew I'd get about 50 messages in my inbox that are all from bots trying to make me buy plays. I think SoundCloud have finally got on top of that now, which means that they've moved into comments. So I ended up deleting about 50 comments on the track there that were doing the same thing. But even so, that goes back to, and this is, it's over 10 years ago now, when SoundCloud's front page was actually meant something. And getting high onto SoundCloud's front page and getting the plays there actually might get you noticed and increase your record sales, certainly around the hip-hop scene. They pioneered a lot of this. The thing is, though, pretty much immediately, when people realised how to game it with bots and people realised that stuff was being hyped with bots, it meant then that the front page became meaningless because everybody knew it was being gamed. You know what we said before? Things work until they don't.
Yeah.
Well, that one, there was a time when buying followers did work in a perverse way. Still doesn't make it right, but at least it was actually accomplishing something. Temporarily, because if your content didn't back it up after that, then it wouldn't actually bring you anything tangible. But it did do something. But as soon as people realised what was going on, it stopped working. And here we are over 10 years later, and people still think it's going to bring them business, even though everybody sees it coming. Every platform in existence has things in place to stop it from working. And here we are in 2020. It is now just a stupid way to try and build your follower count, because it's going to get noticed. You're going to get rumbled. It might get you pulled by the platforms that are using it anyway, and just nothing tangible will come from it.
I just want to, the only thing I want to clarify is we're not talking about creating like legitimate funnel where you bring people in through, like, you know, you run a Facebook ad, you offer real content, people get excited about it. They want to take the next step and download or go to your page or whatever. We're not talking about
absolutely
that.
Absolutely not. We're talking about where you PayPal $50 and then your follower account goes up by 1,000.
Yeah, in a couple of days. I promise you. Yeah. I promise you 10,000 likes by Tuesday. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, you don't want to be doing stuff like that. Now, Joe and I have there is a place for bots, you know, in certain ways. And you have to do it in a way that you're not trying to game people, or you're not trying to make, you know, trick people. They know, you know, what is happening. They understand that, you know, you're not physically sitting there typing. You've set up some kind of system so we can quickly communicate and figure out what your needs are so we can get you to the right place. It's kind of like, you know, Carrie, when you call on the telephone and they're like, press 1 if you want tech support, press 2 if you want billing, press, you know, that's automated. Everybody's used to it. Everybody understands that. Everybody understands why that is happening. We're not talking about, you know, that type of thing. We're talking about what Carrie said. Send me $50 and you'll have 1,000 followers tomorrow. That stuff like that, never good. Stay away from jazz like that. Joe, you back?
Yeah, I'm back. Sorry, guys.
That's okay. So we were talking about these like crazy bot. You know the ones that are obviously spam, where you know pay $50 and the guy gives you 1,000 followers. Do you have anything? We were talking basically that's bad. That's basically what we said. Do you have anything you want to add to that? Or
it basically just don't do it. You don't know the quality. There's no real quality there. They're not that going to be that interested in your content. And if you think that's going to get you buys, you're wasting a lot of money because you're not going to really get any buys from them. They have to be, like I said, they have to be pre-framed. You have to make sure that they have the problem you're trying to solve, where they're the right audience. And those bots, they're just trying to make their money. If you're going to buy those, they're not considerate of you whatsoever. Just like you should be thinking of the value you're giving your audience. You know, you really want to think about whether these bots are going to bring you the audience that's going to care about what you're publishing.
What I want to move on to from here, because we've had this settled, is that Joe, I want you to talk about the value of email. I think one of the mistakes people think in 2020 is that nobody cares about email. Email's not worth anything. You shouldn't worry about emails. Can you speak to that for a minute?
Ah, wow. Where do I start? not only are emails still opened and do people still care about their emails, but those people have raised their hands at some point. Well, hopefully, as long as you didn't buy the emails. If they've actually seen a piece of your content, raised their hands, opted in on a little opt-in form, which I'm not going to assume you all know what an opt-in form. So an opt-in form is something that pops up on one of your sites or one of your landing pages. Or it can be a cart page. It can be a social media. There's a lot of ways that you collect someone's email. But once you do, those people raise their hands and said they care about what you're publishing. So they are golden to you. They're golden to your business in every way. And you shouldn't just leave them hanging. You should continuously try to give them value.
Absolutely. What I want to do is I'm going to already say this. I was thinking that we should do a show on email and give people like some maybe 10 types of emails that they can put together send out to their audience weekly, bi-weekly, every week. Some people believe that, you know, the more email, the better. So maybe you want to do it a few times a week, but I think we should do a show on the value of email and how you can compose email. So give people real tools on what to do with email. But I completely agree with you, especially in light of what's going on, you know, depending on your niche and everything right now, a lot of people feel like some of the policies on Twitter and Facebook are unjust and things like that. So if you find yourself in that type of category, you've got to have some other means and you've got to have people on a list because you don't know what is going to happen. We live in very interesting times right now. So we don't really know how things are going to shake out. And if there's ever been a time to have your email list together and to have those things collected and be sending those out, I think it is right now. So don't neglect email. And I would also add, if you can take it a step further and get a phone number, if you can get that a physical address, this is where I want to go next. I think you should consider doing it. Carrie, you want to say anything about email?
No.
And it's still there. We've talked about it a lot before, how it's changed practically not at all in the last 20 years, which says something. It is the thing you control. I will say, this is going to be one for another show when we're talking about how to make it stand out, because a lot of the time now email, sometimes I get to the point where I feel like, because so much stuff comes through to my email that's not important. And so every day I just have to go through and delete most things. You've got to do something to buck that trend. You can't make your emails look like something that there'll be another one along tomorrow. So
good point.
Say if you delete this one.
Let's talk about that.
Because
that
becomes a pattern and means no one will ever read a word you say again.
That is a great point, and we should address that on our podcast about emails. Mm. I will say that I have people that I follow that send me emails. I read their emails, but I don't read every one. I can't think of any top of my head, but there's several that I get. Like I get them from Eastwood Guitars, and I'm not always. I look at the subject line, or maybe I'm just not in the mood or whatever, and I won't read that one. But I do read their emails fairly consistently. Same way with anything I get from Reverb. I'll take a peek at. So, and there's others, But that doesn't mean just because they're not reading every single email doesn't mean they're not going to read your emails, because I don't read everything. Carrie doesn't read everything. Joe doesn't look at everything. We just can't. There's too much. I think, Joe, you wanted to chime in?
Yeah, I'd like to say two things. One about email is that if you're depending on your social media profile to get the message out to your friends and your audience, that's a bad move, because you're relying on that algorithm to get it out to everyone on that list. It's never going to happen. Not only because they have so much going on in their feed, but because it just doesn't show them to everyone. I think there was a study I looked at a couple weeks ago where it was only going out to like 10% of a person's audience because they were testing it. And that where an email goes out to everyone, even if 1% open it, that's still a much better return than the social media, because they're not going to take action. They're being distracted by it. The other thing is, when you're trying to get someone's email or get someone's phone number, realize, like everything we've been saying, there's a value transition. That email is almost like asking them for a dollar. You know what I mean? You got to give them something, and then they give you the email. So make sure that you're putting in the right amount of work to make sure your tripwires or your lead magnets, whatever you want to call them, the thing that you're giving away for that email is like top quality that you can do at the time. And make sure that your audience is going to see value in that. And then they'll be more willing to give you the email to read that report or see that song, listen to that song, or whatever the thing is that you're doing. It could be a video, but whatever it is, you got to make sure there's value there.
Absolutely. The last one I had on my list was forgetting about real life / offline ways to reach your audience. Yes, we live in the digital era, and right now we're living in an era where, you know, getting out and playing gigs is not a thing at the moment. Depending on when you're listening to this, hopefully that situation will alleviate itself at some point. But there are still ways to reach your audience that do not involve the computer exclusively. And these can be very powerful. This can really make you stand out. While people can ignore email, that's a lot harder to ignore a postcard, a little gift or something, lumpy mail that you might send out, like physical mail. Remember, if you've sent them a CD or something like that, you have their physical address. And I know that some people will feel like this is really cost prohibitive, but there are companies that try to make it easier for you. And there are many other things that you can do. So I want the guys to go around the room and discuss for a minute what you guys think about, you know, let's turn the computer off and let's reach out to people. How could that happen?
Physical things. I think you said it earlier, didn't you? Was it about giving someone, was it you or was it that article? I think it was you that said about if you give somebody a CD now, it'll probably actually stand out because it's not. I think in a way, we're kind of swinging back around to physical goods being a bit more special, because everyone knows that anybody can shit out however many digital things at no cost, which kind of gives them no value at the point of creation. But to produce anything physical means you've at least got to actually produce the damn thing. That's why a lot of readers like physical books now. Coming back to them, like, they're still like ebook. There's still a market for ebooks and Kindle and the like there. But most people who like to read books like books to hold in their hands and read. It's why vinyl's been making a big comeback on for music lovers who don't want to just get everything from Spotify. They want to have a record on the shelf that they can take out and own this object. Some of them are doing CDs in the same way. It does mean that it's a harder sale than it would have been to get people to make a sound a Spotify stream. But hey, that's part of it. That means the physical thing is a different product. And it is a higher ticket product than the digital one would have been. It should have been treated that way. I don't understand sometimes why when you'll buy a digital item, whether it's a Kindle book or whatever, it's the same price as the physical item. I don't get that. because everybody knows that physical items have higher production costs, have shipping costs, and all the rest. So why wouldn't a physical item be more expensive than a digital one?
I question that all the time because I'm a big fan of Audible, and there are still books that there are a lot of books that I want to read that are like $22.99, $39, $29. I'm like, wait a minute, this is going to take a second to download onto my, you know, my phone that's going to get thrown in the garbage in a year and a half. Anyways,
and the thing is,
what is going on? Why? It makes no sense.
This is what killed CDs in the old music industries. Because when it came to CDs in the 90s and they were selling CDs for £20, $20, whatever it was, everyone was saying, hang on, we all know that these CDs cost pence to produce compared to the vinyl one, and you're charging three times the price for it. So what they always said back then was, quite rightly in a way, you're not actually paying for the blank CD. What you're paying for is the art that's on it, or sort of everything that's gone into making the music that's on there, which is true. But you can't say that and then openly rob people by marking up the physical item too. And it kind of feels the same way in the digital. It's like they use that as an excuse, but they still pay the artist peanuts.
Yeah. It's a
Hollywood accounting.
Yeah, I don't know how all that works in terms of the accounting, but other ways you could reach out to a physical audience is to do special appearances, limited. Right now, it'd be very limited in, you know, eateries, coffee houses, things like that, where you could give out a little gift. What are those things called? I can never remember what they're called, Carrie. They're like a rubber band that goes around your wrist, but it's not a rubber band. It's got your band logo. Or it's got something cool on. I forget what they're called. But those things.
Wristbands.
Somebody call them gummy bands. I don't know what they're called. Gummy bears. I don't know what they're called. But, you know, little things like that, people really like. It's very easy for somebody to walk around with. Especially if make it look cool. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. There's other ways of getting that. The other thing you can do is look at, find other people that are sending out physical. This is a little bit of a guerrilla approach. So this takes some balls, but look for other people that are sending out physical things and that are sending them, and that would be in your niche, and contact them and say, you know, you're publishing. Or maybe sign up for their thing first. I've noticed that you send out a physical newsletter. I would like to, you know, we have a similar niche. I would like to maybe reach out to your fans and find out how you could reach out to them and maybe get some of those fans on your list by joint venturing with somebody who's already doing something like this. So there are physical newsletters and things like that go out that would be in your niche. There are maybe even small magazines. I'm not talking about major magazines. I'm not talking about Rolling Stone or Billboard or anything like that. But there are small publications like that go out. Maybe a guy has a small mailing list. He sends out a newsletter every week or every month, rather. And maybe what you do is say, hey, I want to include my CD in your newsletter. To help you out, I will pay for the newsletter cost, you know, the month that you send out my CD with your newsletter. So that would be somebody who's an indie-ish artist would find that as a giant help. And it's a way to get your music in the hands of an audience that would be interested in it. Because usually, right, Karen, I think this is true of most people, that the folks that like, Carlos talks about this, the people that like seek out indie music and are looking for the new band, there's people that do that. They like that. They're bored with, you know, the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s. They want to hear something new.
Yeah.
They are going to be way more receptive. They're people are going to be receptive anyways. So people that are audiences of indie artists are generally in the mindset of like, if it's new, you can get me interested. I'm open to it. It's the people that, you know, that is a way to maybe, and it's just a total guerrilla approach. It requires picking up the phone and, you know, talking to people and building a relationship with somebody.
What you just described, it used to be the only way we had to do it. And it was like, getting on magazine cover CDs. And sometimes if your PR guy paid a bit more, then you'd get to include a whole CD that would just be your band. And the people, and exactly that. I've got one that I still got in my collection somewhere. I've never heard of the band since, so I think they sank without trace after this. But at least for that 1 month on that magazine, they put out a demo on there. I think what it was that it turned out to be the only thing they released. I think maybe the band broke up or something. But at least then I knew who that band was because it got onto a decent music magazine at that time. And you're right, people, especially in music there, they want to, and I've said it before, specialist music fans and independent music fans want to find somebody who's nobody else's favourite yet. They want to find that band who's just theirs. And this comes back to, again, why I think that overinflated follower numbers is a false friend. Because when you look at somebody like that who's got 50,000 followers and boasts about it all the time and boasts about what a big shot they are, they're thinking, great, good for you. Now, where's the little guy who no one's heard of yet who's going to be my find? And if that person who's been boasting of 50,000 followers could have qualified as that person, they're not going to get a looking, so I don't think they need my help anymore. And if it is a fake number and they are still that person, but they've done that, then I kind of lost interest because they've been hyped.
Yes. Absolutely. So those people, I would tell you to kind of seek those people out. I will give you an example from my own life. Many years, in the 90s, I bought an album, and I do not remember what it was, but I do remember this. It came with a compilation CD. Mm-hmm. And I listened to that compilation CD and absolutely fell in love with a band on there. I went and bought their record. The band was called Puya, and I don't even know if they're still around or not. They were from Mexico, and they were a heavy metal band. And I became a Puya fan because of that compilation CD. So it stuff like that works. So finding kind of guerrilla ways to sort of joint venture with other folks that are doing things like this is something that I think that we forget. And whether it's online or offline, this sort of like partnering up, joint venturing with people, stop being the Lone Ranger. Getting out there and creating those relationships with other artists is can be very, very powerful. Something you want to consider. Go ahead, Joe.
I think one of the things we need out there is, you know how we said not to just send an email out to someone you don't know. Most of the time you're sending it out to someone who raises their hand and they're saying they're interested in what you're doing. Well, you can borrow someone else's influence over those people. Like if they raise their hand and said they like Lou and I don't know them yet, I can talk to Lou and say, hey, what I'm doing matches what you're doing, actually kind of like we did on this podcast, and we can combine forces and I can come to, and present to your audience, and this is what's in it for you, this is what's in it for your audience, and obviously there's a little bit in it for me, and make sure it's a win-win in value for all three parties. And then you're borrowing that influence, you're borrowing that relationship. But it's just like if I'm sitting here at the campground, if I walk up and tell someone, hey, you should meet Bob, I want to make sure that I'm not introducing them to a crazy person or someone who's going to make me look bad, that's going to lower my status. So you've got to have your stuff together and make sure that value's there and make sure that it's a good connection. It's a good fit.
I absolutely agree. But the only way you're going to know that is to start creating relationships with other artists.
Right. Niche.
Don't view them as competition. Start looking at it as like, we're kind of all in this together, and you don't know, sometimes just by talking to somebody, you might talk to 10 folks and there's not really any way to kind of work together, but it might be that 11th person where you can do something they can't do and they have something to offer you. So this is where we start building. We start building those things. I mean, there's a reason why, okay, again, before the pandemic, why there were these, $3,000 marketing weekends that, these different people like Tony Robbins or whoever would host with all these different speakers, right? Because the audience does benefit from that because they get to hear all kind of great content that can, and they'll like this guy and they won't like that guy, and that's okay. It also is great for the the guy organizing it, because he's going to make money or she's going to make money off the situation. And it's great for all the individual presenters as well, because they are sort of, like Joe said, you said it great, man, borrowing their influence. That's very, very powerful. And it's something I think that we forget about, and I've said this many times on this podcast, is we spend a lot of time, and a lot of coaches talk about, you know, getting, you know, building your fan base, you know, from the ground up, creating a funnel, et cetera. But it's very important that you are, as soon as you can, interacting with other influencers. And you're, even if you're not an influencer, you're an influencer yet, so reach out to them. I love your YouTube channel. Oh, you know, you posted this song the other day that was so great. Is there any way I could get the tablature to that? You know, start building, you know, start talking to people. Everybody loves to have their ego stroke. Be honest about it, though.
I mean, keep it the right side of brown nosing.
Yeah,
though.
Keep the right side of brown nosing. But it shouldn't be just brown. These are people you should be genuinely interested in. Like, don't just pick random folks. Pick like people. We're all listening to podcasts, following YouTube channels, listening to bands. Start reaching out to them. Just saying you love what they do. Start building. Start creating that conversation. You have no idea where that could lead. You're a guitar player. Maybe their guitar player quits. And they know you because you've been talking to them for 6 months, and you know, you've built up a relationship. Your joke, sending funny jokes to each other, and everything like that. They know that you play. You might land yourself an audition, if not a gig. Yeah. So that's a great way to start that.
There is a line, though. In fact, wasn't there a guy who stalked you for a while, trying to drop hints that he should join your band?
Drop hints that he wanted to be on the podcast. He didn't drop hints. He actually got really shitty with one of my co-hosts and wanted me to fire my co-host and have him be on the podcast. That was not cool. Don't be that guy.
So one of the things about influence also, when Tony Robbins, okay, maybe not Tony Robbins, but
I know that
when
was
someone's running a summit, they make sure to have a versus B versus C level influencer. So they'll go out and find people at their level and one step up and make sure the value's there so they all can share their audiences and then share it to all of them, making sure that the message is equivalent so that they can go out and get access to each person's list. So even if you're like low on a totem pole, even if you're a D level influencer, go out and start making relationships with people in your market, people that would compliment you, because you never know when that day is going to come when one of you is going to want to have a podcast or have a summit and be able to share that influence and help your audience even more than you would have been able to alone.
Great point. Great point. I mean, a lot of times people, I heard it, I can't remember what I was listening to, it was one of the, it might have been a Dan Kennedy book or something, but they were talking about not everybody like should be taking real estate advice from like Bob Kiyosaki. Not that Bob Kiyosaki is like doesn't know what he's talking about, but if you are like just getting into real estate, you probably better off to be mentored by somebody who's like kind of a rock star in real estate, maybe in your area, like a local type guy, or maybe a regional type guy. I do a podcast on real estate with a real estate agent, and we had a regional real estate guy who's a speaker and everything. He's an influencer in the real estate in that niche, and he does very, very, very well. He's highly requested and everything. A lot of people love him because he's like accessible. So you can be accessible. Somebody that might want to take guitar, they may not want to take guitar lessons off of Slash. I'm just pulling that out of the air because he's not accessible. They might want to take lessons off of Lou Lombardi because Lou is, you know, he's a smaller guy. He's a smaller artist. He's somebody I can relate to. I'm not going to feel intimidated, etc. You know, that's why you have people that, you know, you've got world leaders that will like sit down and pay Tony Robbins $100,000 an hour or whatever. But then you've got people like me who hires other coaches that are, you know, closer to me in my level, because I know that these people are A, they're in my price range, but B, I'm going to be able to relate to them. They're going to be able to relate to me. So don't always assume that because you're not famous that somebody isn't going to want to work with you. Keep that in mind.
To expand the analogy, not everyone in real estate is building skyscrapers. Exactly. That's probably quite a small percentage are.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. That you said it better. What Carrie said. He said it better than me.
Was that most people in real estate aren't building skyscrapers.
Right, it's true. So don't be afraid that you can't. There are people who are in that kind of like maybe just a few steps ahead of you. I think that's a really good way to start. It's going to be less intimidating for you too, to start to kind of like build a little bit of relationship. Find an indie band that you really love, follow them, get to know them, talk, become a fan, see how it works. You'll get ideas. You may not end up ever doing anything with them, but you'll see how it works. And you might pick up a lot of great ideas that you can use yourself as well. Anything else you guys want to hit on before we wrap this up for today? Any other giant no-nos?
No, I think a lot of people have a hard time creating content. You know, with making sure that the purpose of your content, it moves fluently through and provides value to eventually reach a sales point. A lot of people have a problem making that transition, and especially since you mentioned SEO and keywords and all that stuff. Once they get into the technical, they tend to separate the technical from the actual value and from the actual entertainment and the content. And I'd like to say that it's very doable to go out and find templates, you know, follow your competition and get information and ideas, but then sit down and say, okay, what value am I giving? What's the purpose of this content for my audience? And then how do I write that in a way that it still has all the keywords and everything in it that it presents? And that's kind of like a flow and a mentality that you can follow to be able to do both at once. It shouldn't be just keywords and just trying to get into a search engine or just value. You can do both.
Okay, I hear a topic. So somebody make a note. That is another topic for another podcast. That's a great idea. That's a great topic because that's something I struggle with too. Like, I don't want to be like so like tied to keywords and SEO that I can't make good content. But I do want my content to be found via keywords and SEO. So you're kind of what my dad would call between a shit and a stink. So I think that is a great topic for a future podcast. So let's definitely get into that. Carrie, anything you want to add before we get out of here?
I think we've covered it.
Okay. So stop going after everyone. Stop thinking the whole world is your audience. Stop sending unsolicited emails and direct messages. Quit posting over and over on social media. Like my band. Ditch the follow, unfollow approach on Twitter and Instagram. That's not what those programs are about. You're missing the point of them if that's all you're doing. No buying random followers, likes, or downloads. Stop it. Stop.
So it's all kind of negative when we sum it up like that. Then we're going to talk about decent content next time.
Right. Don't feed the bots. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So don't go for the sale too soon or the hard sell. Stop forgetting. Remember email. Don't forget about email. Get into real life. Find ways. Start talking to people. Figure out ways to reach out to your audience, your niche, with real life stuff, offline type stuff. Build relationships. You know, don't forget that you can build relationships with other artists and people in your niche. Don't have too many things, websites, etc., in different places with no focus. And remember to whatever you're doing to be very, very consistent. Those are the 10, 11, 12 things that you should stop doing or change. And I think we along the way tried to give you some good alternatives as we went along. As always, you can find out more information by going to lulombardirocks.com. That is you get access to our groups and everything through there. It's at lulombardirocks.com. Carrie, how do folks find you again?
HKmusic.co.uk.
And Joe?
For all musicians, just hit me up at lulombardirocks.com. And if you're not a musician, then orangetreemarketing.com. But either way, if you call me out, I'll answer on lulombardirocks.com.
All right. Guys, have a great week. We'll catch you all on the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus Musicians Mastermind.